You are listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprungs disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprungs with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 123 of Tom's Hirschsprungs podcast. I'm very glad to be joined this evening by Sadie. Sadie, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Tom, for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on. And we are here to talk about your daughter who has
Sophia.
Yes, absolutely. Has total colonic Hirschsprungs disease. And is just over 5 months, is that right?
Yeah, she just turned 5 months on the 24th of March.
Fantastic. And you're coming off months after giving birth. I mean, so kudos to you. Absolutely. I find that absolutely incredible. Come on, you know, so soon after. So yeah, absolute kudos for being here. It's incredible. Now I guess we can start from the very beginning. So yeah, over to you.
Thank you. So Sophia with total colonic, basically totally healthy pregnancy, and you know, perfect labor and delivery. And then it was pretty much the day that she was born, I started seeing some things happening. I knew that something wasn't right. I already have a son who's five. So, you know, I've been through having a baby before. And we fed her once after she was born. And then things started happening. She would kind of like gurgle at her mouth and then kind of bubble and then like gag. And I never seen a baby do that before. So I knew something was wrong. I would pick her up. I would turn her over, pat her on the back, and like a little bit of like yellowy tinted, like I would say the amount of spit up, but it was, you know, a big amount for a baby. It seemed like vomit to me. So anyways, this is happening throughout my time in the postpartum care room. And, you know, I made it known to the nurses that this is happening. Because she was delivered in 5 minutes, the nurses mentioned that probably from a quick delivery, she had fluid in her tummy. It would probably surpass in the next 24 hours. So I was like, okay, not too worried. Continued to happen throughout the night. And then, you know, I had said to one of the nurses, like, you know, I think she's choking, like when she does this. She mentioned, do you know what to do when a baby chokes? Which I, of course, do, but I was concerned. I knew that this was not normal. I felt scared to walk away from her in the bassinet because I thought that she would choke. So anyways, you know, she's not really feeding. She's still doing this vomiting thing. And then, you know, it comes the next day and it should be about time for discharge. Well, you know, she hasn't passed meconium. And so the pediatrician and the rest of the team come in, they take blood work, they look at her. There was like probably at least six people in the room at one time. It was pretty like overwhelming. I mentioned to the pediatrician, you know, she's still vomiting. And he mentioned again, it would pass in the next 24 hours or so. So then, you know, about an hour goes by and a nurse comes in and they basically assist her in passing the meconium by essentially, now I know it would be called an irrigation, but without using a catheter, it was more of just like a thermometer cover that they used, and like meconium came out. So they discharged us and we went home and you know, things just got worse from there. She was not peeing because she wasn't eating. She was vomiting much more amounts now because I kept trying to feed her. And she still wasn't passing any meconium on her own. And then it became about 3 a.m. I knew something was wrong. She was uncomfortable. She wasn't feeding like normal. I just knew something was wrong. And I ended up seeing if I could help her pass any meconium myself, because I was confused, like, what is going on? This is not normal. I was able to help her pass it, but again, she wasn't doing it on her own. So then the following morning, about 8 a.m., I'm like, I think something's wrong. I think we need to go back to the hospital. So then, you know, I told my husband, I called my mom to stay with our son, and we got ready and took her to the hospital. Prior to going to the hospital, I was just looking up, why is my newborn not pooping? Because this seemed to be the biggest issue. Like, she's throwing up, but she's not pooping. So there seems to be a connection there. And basically, Hirschsprung's disease was the first thing that came up. But, you know, everyone tells you when you look something up, take it with a grain of salt, right? Like, so I'm like thinking, no, like, there's no way, like, you know, I'm scared, of course. So I'm like, who knows? So we go to the ER, we're sitting there, and just this emotion came over me, like, it's not where I want to be with my two-day-old baby right now. Like, you know, also postpartum myself, like, I just started getting upset because I was honestly scared. And, you know, we get triaged, we explain the situation to the triage nurse, to which she asked us to try feeding her because her sugar was low. And we tried feeding her, and she did not take anything from the bottle. She only vomited. So, you know, that's kind of concerning. She's not even taking anything, but she's vomiting. Like, so then, luckily, you know, they did admit us, because prior to me saying that she hadn't peed, they were going to let us go. But because I said she hadn't peed and that she may be dehydrated, they decided to admit us. But I thought that was strange because I told you she hasn't passed meconium. That should be a concern, in my opinion. So yeah, I thought that was strange. But then, you know, I can get into more detail after, but looking at her medical records from the hospital there, there was a miscommunication on her hospital records. One thing says past meconium, one thing says past meconium with assistance. So somewhere in there, someone put something that was not accurate. So then, you know, they admit us. We're sitting in the ER for about 6 hours. We sat in the ER with Sophia, and she wasn't eating, of course. They hooked her up to an IV. They had, you know, the oxygen and heart rate monitor on her. And just as the time went on, she was turning more and more orange. And I just knew that something wasn't right. She had these little tiny cracks on her hands and feet from being so dehydrated. It was really scary. We ended up going for imaging, x-ray, ultrasound. Then we were finally admitted about 5 p.m. that night to the pediatric floor. A doctor and a student came in. They spoke to us and said that there was nothing they could see on the ultrasound or x-ray that seemed out of the ordinary, just that there was some gas buildup in the small bowel. That is what he said. So that was kind of like, I'm not a medical professional. I'm like, okay, gas buildup, sure. But at the same time, she's not even eating. So it seemed strange. And then, you know, as the night went on, the nurses and the doctor kept encouraging me to feed her. And that was extremely frustrating because she continued to vomit, of course. You know, it's the same pattern over and over. And at this point, it had become even worse, the vomiting. It was then projectile vomiting, and it was very, very yellow. And you know, the nurses offered to feed her throughout the night. I don't know if they thought there was something they were missing or something they could do that would be different than what I was doing. You know, they were calling her lazy, and it was really frustrating. It felt like no one was listening to me, even though I knew something was wrong. The doctor, asked about a history of cystic fibrosis. As you know, there is sometimes a meconium plug with cystic fibrosis. And then he asked about Hirschsprung's disease. Like, he asked about family history. of course, there's no family history, so I say no. To which he attempts to help her with passing meconium, and he again does the same thing the nurse did in the hospital during our postpartum care room. And meconium came out. He said, I don't think it's Hirschsprung's, because if it was, it would have squirted out. And I'm thinking, I don't know if that really makes a difference. Like, you know what I mean? It just doesn't seem like that would be a necessarily typical thing, especially now knowing that Hirschsprung's is different in every kid. You know, every kid handles it differently and shows symptoms a little bit differently. Like, I think because she was so backed up is the reason that it kind of more pooled out instead of, you know. So he just right there was like, nope, I don't think so. He said, I don't think this warrants a call to London, because London, Ontario is the closest children's hospital to us. And this was a Sunday night. So basically, yeah, we stayed the night. Things did not go well. Progressively got worse. Then the next morning was, I had stopped feeding her, even though they kept asking me to, even the next day. I said, no, like, I don't think it's safe. I don't feel comfortable. Like, I'm not feeding her. She was hooked up to fluids. But you know, that does only do so much for a baby who obviously needs more. And then, I was sitting there in the room, decided to get up and go look at her in the crib. And she was choking on her vomit. Her eyes were rolled into the back of her head. Her body was stiff as a board and she wasn't breathing. So it was really scary. And, you know, I just picked her up as fast as I could and I like patted her on the back so hard. And finally she started breathing and she came to it and I screamed at the top of my lungs, like, somebody help my baby. And my husband ran down the hallway to get somebody. We were all the way at the very end of the hallway. So we were far from the desk. And, you know, a bunch of nurses came rushing in. The new pediatrician for that day came in. They moved us to a room that was right beside the desk. They hooked her up to an NG tube and they were like, we're calling London. Thank God. Thank God they did. And, you know, it was very scary that she choked and it's sad that that's what had to happen to escalate things. But at the same time, I'm like almost like thankful that happened, because if it didn't, like, what if they still wouldn't have believed me? What if they still would have been brushing it off? Like, you know, so anyways, basically they called the transport team, took like 2 to 3 hours for them to come, from London, cause that is about 2 hours away from us. So they came and they got her all situated. I was able to talk to the team who was going to be taking her. They replaced her NG tube because it wasn't big enough. Nothing was coming out of the one that was put in. So then finally they put a bigger one in, the team from London, and lots of greenish yellow bile came out immediately. And, you know, they were so kind in knowing that, you know, like, I'm obviously scared postpartum. She's a tiny little fragile baby, like 3 days old. And then, yeah, they got her all hooked up to everything that they needed to. They put her in this like little like incubator on a cart to put her in the ambulance and bring her to London. Unfortunately, I couldn't go. I couldn't go with them. So I was very emotional and scared about that, because it's a 2-hour drive away from me, and with people I obviously don't know, even though I know they're going to take the best care that they can of her, of course. So, you know, they said, we're going, lights and sirens, you know, we're going to take her and you guys will get there when you get there, okay? Like, you know, and it was like, okay, like, this is serious now. Like, this is for real. So then, luckily, one of the nurses that was with her, there was a respiratory, and all pediatric, and there was a nurse and another medical professional. I can't remember, but of course, that was such a blur for me. And she ended up getting my phone number and my husband's phone number. And she sent us a picture when they were in the ambulance. Sophia was sleeping. She was good. And it was like so reassuring that she did that. And then when they got to the hospital, she sent a picture and said, we've arrived and she's being watched. So it was like, thank God, you know, like, so that was really reassuring. My husband and I came home, packed our bags, said goodbye to our son, and drove 2 hours to London. Bizarre, like 3 days after giving birth, you never would have thought that that's what you'd go through. But yeah, then we got to London. We immediately knew it was the place to be, because they were immediately on it. She was admitted to the general surgery team for a suspected bowel obstruction. So that's what the pediatrician in Windsor, that's what she admitted her for when she called. So then we were able to talk to some of the surgery residents and, you know, they said, do you know what the plan is? And we were like, no, like, what's the plan? Like, you know, by this point, I'm like, the emotions are put aside. I'm serious. Like, we need to figure out what's going on, like, you know. And he was like, we are going to do an upper GI test, lower GI test. We're going to do x-ray, ultrasound. Like, he's like, we're going to do it all. And I was like, okay, let's do it. Like, this is what we need to be doing, you know.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Because I knew something was wrong. Like, I, when she choked and the team in Windsor came in to help when I screamed for help, I literally said to them, I know that something is wrong between here and here. And I pointed to the upper of her abdomen and basically her bum. I'm like, something is wrong in between here. There, it's not going down. It's only coming up. There's something going on. Like, you know, so then, you know, we did all the imaging and, you know, there was nothing that they could really see right away. It was crazy because they said, you know, usually you can see some kind of narrowing with Hirschsprung's in imaging. But the only thing that was kind of narrow was her rectum. And, you know, we did a contrast enema and even the radiologist said, you know, I don't think this looks like Hirschsprung's. There's a small narrowing near the small bowel, but he said that's not uncommon. So, you know, at this point, you know, we're thinking, don't know what's going on. I think it was maybe day two. The surgeon had come in and spoke to us and said, we are thinking two possible things, but we don't know yet. And so he explained to us pyloric stenosis and he explained Hirschsprung's disease. And he said, I have never seen those two things together, but it's not impossible. So he was thinking that it was both of those things. So then day five rolls around and it's like she needs food. So they ended up taking her for a PICC line procedure. They put her under, put a PICC line in so that she could get total parental nutrition and be stable while we're figuring out what's going on, because obviously she couldn't eat like orally. Blood tests and everything. Eventually we started the irrigations, which helped significantly. Like, obviously she became very distended. You know, her tummy was not tender anymore. So it was really nice that we started doing that, because it's like, yes, she needs this relief. Like, because if we hadn't have done that, you know, her bowels could have perforated and you don't want that. So yeah, basically, it took a little while to figure out what was going on. Once they kind of knew that it wasn't pyloric stenosis, because they did a repeat ultrasound and it didn't get thicker. So they knew it wasn't that. They started working on suspected Hirschsprung's. They did the rectal biopsies, and unfortunately, they kept coming back inconclusive. So then there was only one that came back conclusive after doing three of them. They sent us home after 2 weeks doing the irrigations, said, we'll see you in 3 to 6 months for a pull-through surgery. It probably is Hirschsprung's disease, you know. And at this point, I had started feeding her. It was a little bit difficult. She would still have like slightly yellow bit up. It wasn't the amount that it was before, but it was still yellow. The team wasn't concerned about it though. So then, you know, we were home for 5 days. We're waiting for the second biopsy to come back and confirm. And on day five, I was getting ready to go get more medical supplies for her irrigations. And I go to get her out of her swing and she has vomited all over herself, bright yellow. And I'm like, oh no, this is not good. And I started to feel like the irrigations were becoming less successful as time went on. So I was kind of thinking that plus the vomit, I'm like, this is not good. Like, we're back to the beginning. So I called my husband. I said, we need to go to London. He's like, okay. I call my mom. I'm like, you have to pick up my son from school because we have to bring Sophia to London. Something's wrong. So we go to London. We're in the ER very quick, very, very quick. Like, you know, and by this point, she's like 3 weeks old. So it was very quick. She was the youngest one in there. And right after we were triaged, the nurse says, can I get a private room for this baby? Bring us to a private room. And then her surgeon, luckily, he was there. He was on call and he came down to see her. The resident surgeon came down to see her. They did an irrigation, did an x-ray. You know, we basically did everything we could. And her surgeon ultimately was like, I'm not very happy with these results. Her stomach is very ballooned, so much so that it's impressive and not in a good way. And so he basically was like, you know, he knew that I was emotional to be back there and that it was tough, you know, like he knows. And he goes, we might have to do a stoma surgery tomorrow. And it was like, surgery. Like, that's a big word, you know, for a little 3 week old baby. And he's like explaining it to me. And it was just a lot in the moment. He explained that basically they would go in and do the biopsies, full thickness biopsies, when they do the surgery, and we would then have an answer as to what was going on. So I did feel some relief in knowing that that would be the case, because we needed to know. And you know, it was a lot. He said that he would give it the night to find out if we would be doing surgery in the morning. Unfortunately, you know, either way we would have had to have done it. So he did make the decision that night, even without seeing her. He said, you know, it was easy for me to make the decision after seeing her. He called the pathologist, told him that he needs to be there when they're doing the surgery to do the biopsies right away. So next morning rolls around and she has, you know, her belly has gone down, but she's on suction and G tube. You know, that's not long term, obviously, and she's not eating. So, you know, even though her belly went down, she still needed that surgery. So yeah, basically she goes into surgery and 4 hours later, her surgeon calls and he was like, hey, Sadie, Sophia did well. She's in recovery. And he said long segment Hirschsprung's disease. So he said her rectum and her entire bowel, like her colon. So I guess like long segment and total colonic could maybe be similar in a way. But yeah, so basically her entire colon. I then learned about total colonic after her diagnosis. So I realized that that's what it would be called. So after surgery, you know, she has her ileostomy bag. She had a laparotomy with diverting loop ileostomy and full thickness biopsy. That is what she had. So basically they do a small 5 centimeter incision just above her belly button to the left. And then they went in, did the biopsies, like pulled her bowels out to check everything out, and then created the diverting loop stoma ileostomy. So she does still have her colon right now. And then that would be our next surgery is the pull through. So yeah, basically after surgery, you know, it was hard to see her in the condition she was in. She was very pale. Her heart rate kept skyrocketing. And, you know, obviously she's got these bandages and stitches and this new ostomy bag over her stoma, which a stoma after surgery is intimidating. It looks scary. It looks very scary. It was obviously very big at the time, but as time went on, it did get smaller, and it is a very nice stoma that she has now. It's not so big and intimidating anymore. I remember being in the hospital and thinking, like, why can't I get a bag to stay on? But, you know, now I can realize that it's because of how big the stoma was making it so difficult. But now it's much easier, of course, especially with the lack of baby ostomy products. It's like you really want to find something that works.
Yeah. Is that still a thing? Because there still seems to be, you know, they seem to have adult bag for children or baby stomas. Is that still the case?
Yeah. So for Sophia, there is two different like newborn baby like ostomy products. One is by Hollister and one is by Coloplast. Personally, I like the Hollister the best. But yeah, there was only those two options. So I was kind of in the hospital working with both options, like which one works better. And like, it was horrible. Like it would leak like 2-3 times a day. I would have to change it. It's like, you know, I became comfortable with doing it, but at the same time, like my poor child, like tearing this off so many times a day and putting a new one on, like, you know, but we've got a routine now. It's good. It's a lot better. but yeah, so then more tests came after her diagnosis, though, because her surgeon mentioned a lot of times other things can be associated with long segment or total colonic, because that is something that's more commonly genetic. So he wanted to look for CCHS, which is the congenital central hypoventilation syndrome. So that's if you have like the FOX2B gene mutation, which she did get genetic testing done. We have our appointment at the end of the month to find out what it is, but they're not concerned about the CCHS syndrome because they did breathing, like respiratory monitoring on her throughout the night, and she was okay. She was good. So they weren't worried about that. And then, you know, genetics, when they came up to take her blood work, they also just kind of like looked at her facial features and her body and stuff to make sure there was no other like syndrome that they could see to the eye. So yeah, as of right now, everything's good. They did an echocardiogram on her heart. They did ultrasound on her kidneys, because sometimes those two things can be impacted as well. But yeah, everything looks good. Hopefully only the total colonic Hirschsprungs. I think that's more than enough for a little one to handle. But yeah, so right now we're just managing her ostomy, and she's doing well with it, of course. She's had it since 3 weeks old and she's 5 months, so she's doing pretty good. Sometimes there's a prolapse that can be very scary. I think the biggest thing with her ileostomy, especially when we were still in the hospital, was gaining weight. It was really hard to see consistent weight gain for her. So they ended up putting her on sodium chloride because they were like, this will help her retain the weight. Because we weren't allowed to leave until we had 5 consecutive days of weight gain. So we were like, come on, we need these 5 days. We want to go home, you know? So I wanted to enjoy my newborn, because all of that is not at all what I expected after giving birth to her. Still so bizarre to me that's how everything happened. I think there's definitely some trauma, you know, but I just try to be grateful and stay positive, and you know, she's here and she's doing well, and that's the most important thing to me, of course. So yeah, it's been quite the journey.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely sounds like one heck of a journey. I mean, there's parts in that story where, I don't know, when you're talking about the bile, about all of that being sort of sicked up, sounds like absolute classic Hirschsprungs. Mm-hmm. And it's a shame that wasn't sort of diagnosed sort of straight away. Yep. But you mentioned stomas there. There's a couple of things I want to talk about with the prolapses. do they still teach the sugar trick where you put sugar on the stoba?
Yes. So actually, we had in-home nurses for like a few weeks after getting home. I'm pretty independent with it, so we don't have them anymore. But when her first prolapse happened and I reached out to them, they mentioned that sometimes you can put sugar on it and it will go back in. One thing, though, that I have found to work so far for me, knock on wood, is like cold compress. So that seems to help. If I lay her down, she's calm, you know, like, of course, not crying and freaking out. Then I just put a cold compress on her stoma. Every once in a while, take it off, look at it, take it off, look at it type thing. And eventually it will go down. So that has been helpful because I'm sure, you know, you've probably heard, but with prolapses, if they don't go back or if they get dark in color or, you know, if stool is not coming out, then that is a risk because that could mean emergency surgery to remove any dead tissue that could have happened during that prolapse. So, you know, that is a scary thought. And unfortunately, because she's a baby and lacks the abdominal muscles, when she cries and she's like really crying, sometimes that's what happens. So it's like I want to keep her happy all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't know the cold compress one. I think I haven't heard that one. That's a really interesting one. I don't know if anyone else listening has, but I hadn't heard that one at all. And on stomas as well, I know you mentioned that when you went in the second time and they talked about stoma surgery, and I presume when they talk about stoma surgery, then there might be like a form to sign or something.
Yeah.
Just in the moment, so I've spoken to parents who've been in a very similar situation to this. In the moment, and they're talking about the word stoma, does any of it go in at that time?
Yeah, that's a good question. Honestly, like, I was very emotional in that moment, especially once I kind of heard that that's what he wanted to do. But he kind of explained it, like, right away when he was talking about it. He mentioned, you know, we might have to do a stoma surgery tomorrow, which is when I would go in and bring her working bowel to her abdomen. And I actually knew what a stoma and an ostomy, ileostomy, was already. My grandma had colon cancer for 6 years, and she had an ileostomy as well. So I already knew like what it was. I, of course, didn't know the side of what I'm on now, like changing it and all that, etc. But I knew that it was a thing, and most commonly, you know, in bowel cancer patients that would receive it. Or even, you know, I'm now learning like a lot of people who have Crohn's and colitis also will end up with an ostomy, and, you know, they talk about how it gives them their life back. So I did know a little bit about it. And then once he explained it, but in that moment, I was just thinking, like, my baby going into surgery, like, this is scary. Like, you know, especially when she's already not well off and that's why she needs surgery. It's kind of scary. Like, she's already so fragile, you know, like, how much can she take, you know? So it was scary. There was lots of days and nights that I just kept praying that, you know, she would stay with us and she would, you know, be okay, and the doctors would figure out what was going on. And, you know, I grew up Catholic, and I pray, and I've never prayed harder than I did in that time, honestly, because I just thought, Lord, protect my baby. Like, you know, it's a scary time to go through all of that, right? So, yeah.
The station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Absolutely. And I know that faith has been there for a lot of people, especially in those very, very trying times. And I think there's a lot of people I talk to who really rely quite a lot on faith to really get through those times. And I think that's, yeah, definitely.
I think I was a little bit frustrated. So, you know, of course, with both my pregnancies before giving birth to both my kids, I've always, you know, pray to God that they would be healthy, we would have a safe and healthy delivery. And, you know, and I think I was a little bit angry that she was born and all of this was happening. Like, but you know what? Something I've realized is that God gave her to me, and God gave her to me for a reason. And, you know, I have to trust in his plan. And, you know, like I said, God gave her to me for a reason. And I truly feel like, you know, I'm doing everything I can for her. And even especially when it comes to advocating, because, you know, a lot of people don't know what Hirschsprung's disease is. So.
Oh, they don't. They definitely do not. But yeah, I think there is also, like you kind of alluded to there, that sort of feeling of why me sometimes, you know, whether it's in your situation, whether you're a parent of a child with Hirschsprung's, or whether you're in my situation and you have Hirschsprung's and you kind of think, yeah, but why did I get it? Especially because we're sort of in similar situations where we have no family history of the condition. You know, I have no family history. Sophia doesn't either. So you kind of think, well, why did I get it? You know, or why did my baby get it? And I think that is a perfectly understandable reaction. I think that's perfectly normal. And hopefully one day we will get an answer. But at the moment, we kind of don't. I know you spoke a bit before as well, just on that sort of mental side as well, about the sort of PTSD trauma effect.
Yeah,
that's absolutely, again, in my experience and the people I spoke to, that is absolutely 100% a thing, 100% real. And it, you know, I think that is, again, when people talk about the word, I think the word trauma is overused, and PTSD, the words are overused a little bit.
Very true. Yeah. And you know what? Everyone's level of traumatic is going to be different as well. So, you know, it is overused. But I do truly feel, because there is these feelings that keep, you know, coming in certain moments. You know, if I look at pictures of when I was pregnant, you know, or when I first gave birth to her, and, you know, this is before everything happened, it kind of hits me in a different way. Like, you know, I never had these expectations of what would come afterwards, you know, like, so yeah.
I think that, and that's real trauma, you know, that's the real sense of the word, you know, as opposed to when people use it quite flippantly, which frustrates me. That's, That's
100%. No, 100%. Like, you know, being in those hospital, those days and those nights of, you know, watching her, and there's nothing I could do for her to console her. Like, you know, all I could do was give her her soother. I couldn't feed her. I could hold her. I could rock her, you know, which was really, you know, something I'll always remember is the nurses and my husband both, like, constantly, both times being at the hospital before and after her surgery, mentioning every time I would be holding her in the rocking chair and rocking her that she just seemed so content with me. And that was just always something that I will remember, because that felt good in the moment. Like, I was her safe space in the moment, you know, even though she was dealing with so much and in so much pain. And, you know, so that's something I'll always remember that's actually special from that. But other than that, yeah, like all the testing, you know, I went with her to every single imaging, every single test that I could go with her to. Like, I went with her. And it's a lot for a little baby to go through all of that, you know. And yeah, it's not what you'd expect after having a baby, that's for sure.
No. I think that obviously people with who have family history of Hirschsprungs, who kind of, you know, you can sort of plan for that. But no, when you're sideswiped like that and you can't plan at all for that, it is, yeah, as I said right at the very beginning, to then come on and do a podcast 5 months on, it is incredible.
Thank you. Yeah. No, I'm very, honestly, like I said about, like, you know, meant to be her mom and God gave her to me, I truly feel like advocating for her and advocating about Hirschsprung's disease and, you know, spreading the word for awareness and all that stuff is truly fills my cup. It feels like I'm doing something. It feels like I'm, you know, I really do want to help those who are dealing with this. Like I said, a lot of people don't know about it. And, you know, I didn't know about it until having a daughter with it. And then, you know, even friends and family not knowing about it either. So, you know, I think also one of the things about not knowing about it is people don't realize just how severe and serious it can be and how it starts. Like, you know, because it is traumatic, I would say, for, you know, parents. And luckily, the baby won't remember things from when they're a newborn. But either way, they're still going through it in the moment. Right. And it's painful. It's uncomfortable. Like, you know, they don't get to just be a normal baby and just eat and sleep and poop all day. Right. Like, so, you know. But yeah, no, I do find a passion in talking about it. So I'm glad to be on here.
Yeah, most definitely. And just finally, I know we said we were going to talk about this as well. So, again, I invite you to remind me of this, but Sophia is due another surgery and there's a GoFundMe, for that surgery. Do you want to talk just a little bit about that?
Yeah. So yeah, basically, Sophia will be receiving her pull through surgery, and which, you know, the surgeon would go in, remove her colon, and any other affected bowel. I know that her rectum is affected, but this is kind of where things come into play. Unfortunately, in Canada, where I live, there is really no general, there's only general surgeons that do these surgeries. There's no specialist, like colorectal specialist, and pediatric at that. So basically, being in a Hirschsprung's group on Facebook, I have, you know, learned about different resources, different people's stories, experiences, and it sounds like, you know, many families, you know, go through issues after a pull through, or, you know, they're going through other surgeries. And it sounds like some families end up going to see Dr. Wood in Ohio at Nationwide Children's Hospital for colorectal care. And, you know, I thought with her having such a severe and rare form of Hirschsprung's disease, you know, one that happens in every 1 to 50,000 or 100,000 kids. It's quite rare. And I felt that it was important that we see a specialist for her to have the most success in long term after her pull through surgery. you know, so I created a GoFundMe because anything out of country is not covered, unfortunately, by our Ontario OHIP program, and it has to be paid out of pocket. Fortunately, they have given us a discount because we are out of country, but it is still $60,000 to go to nationwide for us. So, and that would be, honestly, even if we were to go somewhere out of province. I know that Montreal has a hospital that does some colorectal work, but even if we were to go there, it would be about $30,000 to $40,000 as well. So I just really want to give her the best chance at long-term success with her pull-through surgery so that she can have a somewhat normal childhood and hopefully, you know, not have to have significant amount of medical intervention or surgeries afterwards. Yeah, just by seeing a specialist, I think that it's going to be the best thing for her in having that success. You know, Dr. Wood at Nationwide has done these surgeries for 26 years. He's been working with pediatric colorectal. So I'm sorry, you can't beat that. Like really 26 years in pediatric colorectal is highly, highly specialized, you know? Yeah. And it's, of course, nothing against any general surgeons. Sophia's general surgeon saved her life, you know, and he is a great surgeon, of course, of course. You know, he did mention to me when we had Sophia's follow-up that he'd only seen a few of Sophia's cases in his career. So that's kind of like, you know, if he's only seen a few, maybe he's only done it a few times, you know. So, I just want to give her the best chance possible at long-term success, like I mentioned, by seeing a specialist. So I did create a GoFundMe. You know, we are hoping to raise, you know, a significant amount to help. I will be doing like host a fundraiser with my family and friends in our town. And, you know, even if we can get it down to an amount that we can afford, being on only one income, because of course I'm one on mat leave, and two, now that she has this complex rare disease, I have to be her caretaker as well. So yes, there's a lot of things that come into play, and I'm just really hoping that I can give her this chance.
Absolutely. And I'll link, the link for that will be in the description of this video. It'll be in the, if you listen to this on Spotify, it'll be in the link there, or Apple, it'll be in the link there. Wherever you're listening to this, there will be a link below that you can contribute to the GoFundMe for Sophia. But just want to say thank you so, so much for coming on. It has been a pleasure to chat to you. And again, as I mentioned, 5 months on after giving birth and going through such an incredible time. I guess it's just left for me to say that I wish all the very best with the GoFundMe and for everything else for you and Sophia in the future. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. Thank you for having me, and thank you for sharing the GoFundMe and spreading the word for Sophia. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast, or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll bring you another episode soon.